Okay, here's the part of the presentation where I'm just going to tell you kind of what I think from my experience. It's not so much of a legal presentation as the first session was. Right? I'm going to talk about kind of your role as individual commissioners and the role of the commission as a whole in relation to your staff. I start out always just kind of going over some assumptions that I make whenever I deal with a board of commissioners. First of all, obviously this is going to take a lot of your time to serve in this role as commissioner, so I think it's a fair assumption everybody's here to serve the public. You want to do something that is useful. You want to, you're interested in a well-run hospital district. I think all senior staff members are dedicated to see a well-run hospital district. You want to make the best of your role here as a commissioner, just like staff wants to kind of do the best that they can for the commission. There's always room for improvement. This is one of those things, kind of like having a baby, right? You don't get a manual when the baby's born to tell you what to do, and you don't get a manual like, here's what you do as a commissioner. This stuff is not intuitive. So kind of good to talk about these things, and this is the part of the presentation that really can be more interactive, and if you have different thoughts, I welcome you to go ahead and jump in at any time. You got to understand that everybody kind of approaches this from a different perspective. You come from different walks of life. You have different backgrounds, different education, and everybody's going to see their role a little bit differently. But you're all in this together as part of a team, including the staff. And so it's important to understand kind of how can we make this team work most effectively so that we can get as much done as we can. So this is really my non-legal thoughts on commissions. That, you know, it started, this talk kind of started with my partner, Frank Schmelick, who gives a management governance talk to a lot of agencies throughout the state. And I've learned a lot from him over the years because he sat in way more commission meetings than I have. And you just get to kind of see some commonalities from commission to commission as you do this job long enough. And so that's kind of the product of our experiences is kind of what generates this talk. So let's talk about what your role is as the commission as a whole. First of all, you are the elected body of the public hospital district, and you have the legal authority and the legal responsibility to operate the district. But that doesn't mean that you manage the district necessarily, because you get people to do that. You hire staff for that purpose. What do? Well, you elect officers. You at least got to have a president, secretary. You probably have other officers. You can adopt rules. You're not required to, but rules that will facilitate the transaction of business. And again, I mentioned if you're interested in seeing some samples, I've got a handful of those I can provide. You establish the budget each year. Staff proposes a budget, but the commission is the one that actually adopts and approves the budget. And you hire and supervise your senior staff, right? And the senior staff is how you execute the global policies that the board is going to discuss and ultimately adopt. Now let's talk about the individual commissioner's authority. The individual, surprising to some, the individual commissioner has no authority. You can't walk in to Pam's office and say, I need this, that, and the other thing, unless the commission has given you that authority. And sometimes the commission will delegate certain authority to individual commissioners. But you don't have that by law. The commission acts as a whole. It acts through the motions that it passes, the resolutions that it adopts, budgets that it approves, and things of that nature. But it must act together as a unit to govern the affairs of the district. That's what the Open Public Meetings Act says. Now, from time to time, you will be given authority to go out and act on behalf of the board. There will be a delegation. That can be a formal delegation through a resolution, or it could just be kind of direction at the commission meeting, but there will be a delegation that some commissioners have. And the perfect example is, and I'm sorry, Annalisa, do they call you the chair, the president? What's your official title?
I guess chair is
The chair, okay. So the chair has been delegated certain responsibilities. The chair helps set the agenda, talks with the superintendent in chief in order to prepare the agenda for the meetings. The chair has other responsibilities that have been delegated over time from the rest of the board. So that's just one example. And if you set up a committee, then certain commissioners will have those delegated authorities. Next slide talks about the superintendent. And the superintendent is a statutory position. It's set forth in RCW 70.44090. And this is the commission's principal employee, which is the chief administrative officer, essentially, of the hospital district. The superintendent is, by statute, responsible to the commission for the administration of its affairs, for ensuring that the hospital district complies with the laws, that it keeps the commission advised about the financial conditions and needs of the hospital district, helps prepare a draft budget, and certifies the board bills, payrolls, etc. What do you want out of a superintendent or any senior staff for that matter, is you want somebody who's fair and honest provider of information, somebody that tells you the straight story. I've sat in commission meetings in the past, been rare fortunately, but sometimes the lawyer knows things, right? And you sit in a commission meeting and you'll hear, oh, the chief say something that is kind of sugar-coated. That's not what you're looking for in senior staff. You're looking for somebody who gives you the honest story. There's good news, hopefully, more often than bad news, but sometimes it will be bad news, and you need to hear both of those in a fair and unbiased manner. The superintendent is also one that accepts and follows the commission direction. Sometimes the superintendent may have her own views of what the commission should do or ought to do in a particular situation, but once the decision is made by the commission, the superintendent and senior staff and the district's attorney will all support that commission decision. That's our job. You have other direct reports to the commission, such as the chief, which manages EMS and makes regular reports to the board, and then you've got your fire district attorney, general counsel, which I serve in that role, but you also have other special counsel that's assisting with the CID, for instance, and you may have other special counsel from time to time. What are you looking for in a fire district attorney?
Wait, you're talking public hospital district attorney, not fire, right?
I'm sorry. I do so many.
You do.
I mean hospital district. Yeah. Do you want the same kind of qualities here? The qualities there is that although we represent the commission, at the end of the day, the commission may need to fire senior staff, right? So we represent the commission, but we primarily work with the staff. Our goal is to, it's easy for an attorney to say, no, you can't do that, or that's a problem, just you can't do it. Our goal is to kind of work to get to a yes, right? How do we do that? We try and be, think outside the box, let's say, to get you to a position where you need to be. We also speak honestly and plainly to the commission, and that's what you pay us to do, is to be honest about things. Again, whether there's good news or bad news, or whether it's news that you don't necessarily want to hear. I never like to give that kind of news, but it is our job to do so. And if we hear of, know about, or see illegal conduct, that's our duty to kind of report that to the commission so that you can take appropriate action. And I apologize for the fire district references here, but it's the same for a hospital district. We work at the pleasure of the commission, the whole commission. We don't take sides. Occasionally you'll have situations where the commission is deeply divided. It's a tough position for a hospital district attorney to be in that position, but we have to work for the entire board. We are trying to be solution driven, and we also will tell you the difference between what's our legal advice and what is our business advice. We won't give business advice unless you want it. And we'll tell you that our business advice may be no better than your own business advice. But we're very careful to kind of distinguish between those two, because well, we are experts in the law, we're maybe no better than you are when it comes to the kind of business decisions, but we just highlight those for you. The other thing we highlight from time to time is political decisions. We're not in the business of deciding what's a good political move, but if we sense that it may have political connotations, we'll let you know that. The last point there is, we tend to be the paid paranoid. So if we get a contractor review, we may be a little persnickety about that. It may look kind of harmless, but we may give you a bunch of suggestions to make, because we're always looking at what can go wrong here with this picture, right? And then we'll let you make the business decision of, is that an acceptable risk to take or not? All right, that's kind of the difference. We don't tell you, don't do that unless it's illegal. We may say, that's a risky proposition. Here's what can happen, but you ultimately make the decision. All right. In terms of your ethical duties as a commissioner, RCW 4223 applies to you, and it says that you can't have an interest in a contract that is a direct or indirect financial interest. There are certain remote interests that are okay, but generally speaking, if you have an interest of any kind, whether it's a direct or indirect financial interest in a contract that is to be signed by the hospital district, it's not okay. And not only is it not okay, but it's going to be, it's potentially void. You can't recuse yourself. So let's say that the hospital district is thinking about entering into a vendor contract with a consulting company, and you are one of the owners of the consulting company, and your compensation can be affected, maybe insignificantly, but will be affected in part by that contract. The hospital district cannot enter into that contract. There's an attorney general opinion on this issue that just says recusal is not good enough for the commissioner that's beneficially interested. It's just that contract is void. So it's happened from time to time that a commissioner is the spouse of of somebody in the bargaining unit, right? And you have to vote on a collective bargaining agreement ultimately. Would that spouse be directly or indirectly interested by that collective bargaining agreement? Of course, because the spouse is the one that is subject to the wages and benefits of that collective bargaining agreement. So that person would have to resign from the commission, or the collective bargaining agreement would be void. Sounds like a harsh result, but that is what the law is in this state. So keep that in mind. If you're financially interested, give us a call, and we'll determine if that's a remote interest or not. All right. The other thing that you can do to get yourself into trouble is disclosing confidential information that you learn in executive session. All right. So you can actually get confidential information other ways, but that's primarily where you will get it. And so those discussions you have in executive session, keep those to yourself or other commissioners and the staff that's involved in those discussions, because that is a violation of the code if you use that for personal gain. And it really shouldn't be disclosed anyhow, because if you're disclosing what's said in executive session, if you think about the effect on others of your commissioners, they're not going to want to speak candidly if all of this stuff is disclosed when it shouldn't be. So just some general thoughts on the Code of Ethics. Even though it's not required, disclosure of the perception of a conflict. Sometimes you'll have a situation where you just want the public to know, hey, I've got some interest here. It may not be a financial interest. It's not technically a problem under the Code of Ethics Act, but I just want everybody to know about it. I'm going to recuse myself from this conversation. That's the kind of thing that kind of builds up your political bank account, because the public knows that you're trying your best to be fair and biased and avoid any kinds of conflicts. Consider seeking attorney advice on the record so that the public knows that, hey, we're not experts in this stuff. We are going to ask our attorney for advice on that. And again, recuse yourself for appearance issues. All right. Each commissioner is the steward of the public's assets and the public funds. And as you know, the public cares very deeply about how their money is being spent. They are watching. They get asked from time to time to approve levy lit lifts and bond measures and this kind of thing. And those don't always pass, right? So the public is watching. How are you using the money? And they're also, they're a lot more informed today, it seems to me, than they have been in the past. So misusing district assets, spending money in ways that are not conducive to the public, are just ways to kind of deplete the political bank account. RCW 42-24080 requires payment only after services are rendered or goods received must be certified by the district auditor. So those are kind of the financial aspects of what the commission does. That's about the most technical I'm going to get here. Now we're going to look at some of the governance and management issues associated with being a commissioner. Okay. First of all, the reason we look at this is that if you understand the role as a commissioner with regards to governance versus management and what the difference between those two is, it's going to make each of you much more effective. It's going to make the commission as a whole much more effective. Public agencies today, I think, are under much more of a microscope, and they can't afford those kinds of mistakes in the past might have been able to get away with. You know, we see year after year, there's different kinds of tax limitations through the initiative process that are brought before us here in Washington. And the public just is tighter, I think, with their money. And because we represent a lot of agencies, we see that some agencies are better at getting community support for their financial measures, their levy, lid lifts, or bond measures, whatever it may be, and other districts are not. And I think that relates in large part to, is the commission transparent? Does the public believe that the commission is managing their money well? Do they have faith and trust in the commission? If so, you're going to get the benefit of the doubt on a lot of issues, including raising taxes. Right? But if you understand your role of being a commissioner as being one of governance versus management, I think that your meetings run much better. The public respects the commission much more, and it makes your service on the board much more rewarding. Finally, I think it allows you to retain really high quality staff. I have I'm not going to mention who it is, but I have one, I actually have two districts right now where I would say that if they went out for a new fire chief, they may have some issues. And it's because, in part, that the commission tends to micromanage and to be a real critic of the chief. And if a candidate were to come in and talk to the rank and file, they would find out that the commission is just too involved in the management rather than kind of the big picture items. And it's going to be tough because who wants to put themselves in a position where they're going to have five bosses or seven bosses, whatever it is, and they're always criticizing the chief. It's tough. So good governance, a good understanding of governance versus management really helps you to attain and attract good quality people. Let's move on to the next slide. Think about your time as a commissioner. It's a scarce resource. Your senior staff are eager to hear what the commission has to say because their job depends on what direction the commission gives. The only time they get to hear you talk as a board and to understand what your directions are is when you're sitting in a commission meeting. Otherwise, they can talk to you one-on-one or in groups of two, but they can't hear you interact as a whole. Your time is limited. How many hours do you spend a month in a commission meeting?
Too many.
On average.
Lately, it's been a lot. Hopefully, like once a month, it could be at the most 3 hours would be the minimum, I think. But lately, we've been having a couple meetings a month.
And maybe that's a good thing, because you need to at this point. But the point is that even that is a small amount of time for staff to be able to hear what the commission has to say and to get direction from the commission. Mm-hmm. And your time is limited. All of you probably do other things, have other job, for hobbies, and all of that. And so your time is limited. It's important to make that time productive while you're at a commission meeting. So next slide, same kind of thing. You have limited time. I view this as really a scarce resource that we need to be cautious of, that we don't squander when we're at these meetings. These meetings need to be productive. So let me then go to the law of triviality, which is, some of you probably have heard about this before. C. Northcote Parkinson was an individual from Vancouver, BC. He created this law of triviality that says that the time spent on any item of the agenda will be inversely proportionate to the dollar sum involved. And he gave an example, hypothetical example, but it's you can probably see how this could happen in real life. He said that a commission had three items on their agenda. The first was the approval of an atomic reactor. The second was the approval of the roof for the bike shed that the workers of the reactor, you know, they rode their bikes to work. What kind of roof should that be? And the third was the type of coffee that was going to be served at the commission meetings. Well, the first topic took almost 5 minutes of time because consultants had already briefed the issue, had already made recommendations to the commission, and frankly, it was too complicated of an issue for the commission to understand, and therefore they approved it right off the bat. The second issue took a little bit more time because everybody had a bit of an opinion about what kind of roof should go over the bike shed, what shape the roof should be, what material it should be, what should be the warranty on the roof, and so forth, and so that took quite a bit more time, but eventually they got to a decision. The last item was what kind of coffee should be served. Well, not everybody knows what the materials should go into the roof of a shed, but everybody knows about coffee, and they have an opinion about coffee. How should it be brewed? What flavor should it be? And so forth and so on. And that item took up the majority of the time, and the commission ended up tabling the item and instructing staff to get some more information before they made a final decision. And so you can see where a commission can kind of do that if they're not careful, right? So anyhow, I think that's just kind of something to keep in the back of your mind. Let's go to governance here and talk about what really is governance and what does that mean versus management, okay? Governance, first of all, is a lot harder than management. You can evaluate your senior staff, right? You give them, they've got a job description, they have certain tasks that they're supposed to do. It's easy to evaluate them. Governance is not like that. How do you evaluate someone on the board? What is the measure of success? Tough to do. Governance deals with the big decisions, the policy decisions that you're making when you adopt a budget. You may not realize that you're setting priorities for the district for the coming year or coming 2 years. These are big decisions that affect the district and that will affect the district for years to come. There are really no measures of success, at least not today. Years in the future may look back and say, that commission was very forward thinking. My gosh, look at all of what they did, and here's how we have benefited from that. But today, it's tough to see what the measure of success may be. Next slide, commission and the manager. So the commission's role really is to think about these long-term issues. That's what governance is. The manager, on the other hand, your superintendent, your chief, your senior staff, they're thinking about how to implement that. You give them some direction. And the one example that, of course, has come up of late is fire and EMS integration. So that's a governance issue. The board needs to decide, what are we going to do about that? What is our strategy? What is our long-term plan? Once that has been articulated, then your senior staff can kind of take the baby steps to help implement that, right? That's how it's supposed to work. So you provide the overall direction, and the manager is eager to get that direction because they need to know what to do, what the commission's direction is before they can do an effective job. I would say that both parties are wanting to make the district a success, to move it forward, to get to the next level. But to do that, you have to kind of understand the roles and be within the lines. So the elements of commission governance is really just articulating a vision of where you want to be. Now, in 5 years, in 10 years? Where do you want to be? Where do you see the district being in 10 years? What's going to happen with EMS, for instance, in that, in, at least in 5 years, 10 years, is it going to look any different or not? One suggestion I always have for boards is at the early in the year, maybe it's your first meeting or second meeting, make a list of some items that, if accomplished, we would say to ourselves, oh, that was a really good year. We really accomplished what we set out to do, that these are good things. Establish a strategic plan, and that's kind of a longer term plan for the future. It usually involves the help of a consultant to come in. You're analyzing what you have, where you're trying to go, and trying to effectuate a roadmap for getting there. So those are some things that you can think about. You may want to, at some point, depending on the issues involved, you may want to hire an outside consultant to kind of facilitate that. Many agencies do. In governance, you're hiring, supervising, and evaluating your management folks. I'm sorry again for the, I will at some point, I guess, change fire to hospital. Here we go again. I apologize for that. But you, what you're doing is you're supervising your senior staff. And the senior staff is looking for that constant direction and feedback so that they know where their priorities are and they can implement. Govern through your budget. That is your one time during the year where you are looking at all of the things that you wish to accomplish. And you say to yourselves, okay, here's where we're going to set our priorities for the year. We definitely want to have this done, and here's where we're going to devote our money for the year. And you don't get that opportunity ever again in context of all of the other things that you need to have done. So a lot of time really needs to be spent each year on the budget. One of the other things that's inherent in effective governance is creating a culture. We talk about this at our firm all the time. What's our culture? You know, those of us who govern the firm, the owners of the firm, do we have an appropriate culture? Is it collaborative? Are we inclusive? Do we have enough meetings so that everybody is up to speed on what we're doing? What is our culture? Are we short with people? Here's what happened many, many years ago. Is there were three owners of the firm. I was one of them. And we had, I would say, just a testy group of legal assistants. And probably back in those years, we called them legal secretaries. We don't do that anymore. But back then, I think we did. And they were kind of sniping at each other. And it was just kind of it wasn't a very good environment. And we're trying to figure out what was going on, and we called a consultant, an HR consultant. We said, we need you to come in here and figure out what the heck we need to do differently. We tried kind of everything that we know to do. So the consultant came in, kind of talked to everybody, came back to us and said, I think I know what's going on, so let's meet. We met in this room, actually, where I am today, and the consultant looked at us and said, you know, the problem is, it's you guys. And you have set a culture here that trickles down, and it's affecting everybody. You're short with people. Some of you guys don't come in and say hello to people. You don't recognize them in the morning. You don't recognize their good work. You've set a culture that is not conducive to a teamwork. It's you're the owners. You view yourself on a different level than them. It's not a teamwork, a kind of approach here. It was eye-opening. I mean, it was humbling, but it was also eye-opening because it's like we decided right then and there we had to do something different. We had to, you know, if you're not deliberate about this in creating your culture, it's going to happen either by default or intention. So I encourage you to think about this, to talk about it, and set a culture that creates one of teamwork. Your staff. In the public, they're always listening at your commission meetings. They're trying to, like I said, they want to do good work. I have found it to be a rare case that you have an employee that doesn't really care about their job. They don't really care if they do a good job or not. Most people do want to do good work, and I know, I have confidence that employees there, the ones that I work with, do. But they need clear path, information. And so when you give direction, when you set these priorities and these policies, you need to be clear with staff. I've had countless situations where a fire chief or some other executive director has called me after a commission meeting that I attended, say, what did the commission say there? What did they want me to do? And it's just not clear. And I might say, I was hoping you knew because I sure didn't understand. Right? That's not a situation that your staff wants to be in. They want to get clear direction. Also in governance, you need to set clear pathways for information. All right, and it has to be observed by the commissioners. So what that means is that commissioners have to understand their role. They're part of a team, and there is going to be a liaison or a person that is really the one that to interact with staff on an as-needed basis. One client that I had one time, I had commissioners who were always going into the office saying, I need this, I need that, I need a bunch of documents to be able to do my work as a commissioner. The staff was going crazy. They had five different bosses. They didn't know who to answer to. And it was just a mess. And they finally said, look, we're going to pass these bylaws. And if you need a document, part of the bylaws was you let the chair know. If you need a document, you need something to be informed to do your job as a commissioner, you tell the chair. And the chair will decide if that is a document that is useful to the entire commission. And if so, then they'll give the direction to staff through the chair. So the chair is the one that is always ensuring that staff is not overburdened, that they can accommodate the request, and that they're getting that the commission is getting the information it needs. So that's really kind of effective teamwork with your staff, so that you get the information you need, and staff is not looking at five different bosses. I see here at the last bullet point, resist the temptation to become the direct pipeline on information. That might not be self-explanatory. I've seen situations where commissioners kind of, I'll talk about this a little later, for lack of a better word, freelance. Go out, get information on their own, and then go in and talk to staff about that information without actually funneling it through the board and speaking with one voice. That is just kind of a recipe for disaster. Again, I think that in terms of effective governance, you have one, you can speak at commission meeting and kind of develop your thoughts, but ultimately the direction to the staff should be through one person. All right. Next slide. Make sure the delegation to the manager is clear and understood. And I should say, make sure the delegation to the chair is clear and understood. So superintendent or chief. There's oftentimes, and port districts are very good about this, other agencies not so much, they pass a delegation of powers resolution. And the delegation of powers resolution says you, as the executive director, have the authority to do certain things. You don't have to come back to the board for that. It's minor stuff. In the example of a port district, oftentimes the executive director has authority to sign contracts up to a certain level without coming back to the board. They have authority to enter certain leases as long as they are on a standard template. They've been approved by legal counsel, so forth and so on. So a delegation of powers resolution says to your senior staff, whoever that may be, whether it's the superintendent or the chief, you have this level of authority that you can execute. You don't have to come back and see us every time. So that's something you can think about to kind of make the manager or the superintendent or chief's job a little easier. And I use the term manager here, but I basically am talking about the superintendent and the chief kind of collectively. All right, the role of an individual commissioner. So each of you commissioners have, if you understand your role correctly, then the governance items that I'm talking about here are going to be formed. There is. Oh, I'm sorry.
You cut out for a second.
Could you back it up just a little bit?
Just back up about 15 seconds.
Okay. It is essential to be informed when you come to a commission meeting. Why is it? And so you get a packet, presumably, in advance of a commission meeting. Mm-hmm. You should read that, study it, understand it. If you need to ask questions in advance, if questions need to be asked of staff, what do you do? What's the appropriate thing? You get to the commission meeting and then ask your questions. That's one way to do it. But what can happen is that the staff may not be prepared to give an answer if they're not anticipating that question. So a better approach is if a question arises as you're reading through the materials is to let the chair know, hey, I don't understand this, I need some more information, I need some documents or data or something, and have the chair work with either the superintendent or the chief to get that in advance if it's important for the commission to make the decision. That way you avoid kind of a pop quiz at the commission meeting where the staff may not be able to answer the question. They want to be able to answer questions. And when we attend commission meetings, we as the attorneys, sometimes we get those pop quizzes too. And I never want to tell the commission, well, commission, I'm going to have to go back and kind of consider that. That's not an answer I can give on the spot. Had the commission just told me in advance what the question was, been able to answer that in the meeting. So that's one tip I would give for kind of a well-run meeting. It allows the discussion to be well-informed, but it does require you to read the materials in advance. And then if there is kind of a gap in the information that you need to have filled, get that filled in advance of the meeting. The public will, as I said, the public looks at these meetings. They come, I think you have pretty well-attended meetings, at least what I've sensed in the past. The public can tell whether a meeting is well-run, whether you're prepared, whether you're not prepared, whether you're kind of on the same page. So these are things that kind of build up your political bank account. As an individual commissioner, your goal is to leave things better than when you got here, right? You want to try and improve the district as much as you can, leave the commission in better shape. Finally, govern before you manage a problem. All right. Occasionally you will need to manage. You will need to, in the case of senior staff, sometimes you have to make a change with senior staff. This is where you get into management. But before you do that, try and govern before you manage a problem. All right. Next slide. Govern slowly and deliberately. Governance is a little different than management. Pam and Carl will, from time to time, day to day, probably have to make decisions in that they don't have a lot of time to really think about and consider. Questions come in, decisions need to be made, particularly in the EMS side. With governance and an elected board of officials, almost nothing's ever that urgent. You usually have the time to deliberate. Going back to the example I gave earlier with the city of Linwood, look what they do. They have enough time. They realize, look, we're going to discuss an issue at one meeting. We're going to wait for another 2 weeks, and then we're going to actually take action on the issue.
Okay, you cut out again.
Okay.
Sorry, the last thing you said was they're going to take action on the issue.
They're going to take action on the issue, which it at the following meeting, which just shows you that they have consciously decided we are going to act slowly and deliberately, give people time to consider issues before they actually take action. Mm-hmm. And that is really, you almost never have to act quicker than that when you're doing this job as a commissioner. So keep that in mind. Realize your responsibility. You are the leaders of the organization. The public looks up to you. You are the face of the organization, and so you're really the keys to the success of it. Its ability to do the things that you want it to do. Watch what you say. Watch what you say in emails, what you say in meetings. Don't attack others. Stick to the issues. Set a good culture, one that is positive, one that is a culture of teamwork, and the public will reward you with that. That's been my experience. Now, recognize you can't make everybody happy, right? You are in the public has a wide range of opinions. You're not going to make everybody happy. You may not make your staff happy all the time, but you got to do what you think is best for the district. And then kind of a final thought is protect and enhance your bank account by thinking to yourself, how's this going to read in tomorrow's paper? Occasionally you have to make decisions that are hard and that you're not going to get positive press on, but you know at the end of the day, it's the best, right? So, all right, team approach to governance. Okay, I got a couple pictures, you can think about your days back in the schoolyard playing tug of war, not a very effective way. These folks in the first picture here are obviously not part of a team. Compare that to your second picture. This is really what we're trying to achieve here, is we're all trying to work together. So the question is, how do we do that?